You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
Hello and welcome to the Choose FI podcast. You know, today on the show, we're going to explore so many captivating themes. And the place that I wanted to start is personally in my own life, I've complained about this lost decade. And maybe many of you can relate to that. But with our guest today, he actually spent 10 years in prison. Now, that would seem like a lost decade. And for so many people, I can imagine that you come out of that and you say, there is no path for me to financial independence. I blew it. I blew my shot, and there's nothing that I can do to undo that, which obviously is a limiting belief, but it's a real, I can imagine that it would be an incredibly real thought process that can take hold and guide your decisions both for good and ill. Today's episode with Billy from Wealth Well Done is going to help us unwind that limiting belief and forge a path to financial independence. And to help me with this, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I'm doing quite well. And yeah, I think you hit on it there. This is about mindset. That's what I've been so impressed with Billy. As I've dove into his content, I was actually on the What's Up Next podcast with him about a month ago. And I was just blown away by his story, his enthusiasm, how he's taken this adversity and not only grown from it, but is on this path to FI and has this amazing life. I said, Jonathan, to you immediately, we have to get him on. And you had already spoken with him at FinCon and scheduled this podcast. So it was absolutely incredible. So yeah, I'm really excited to introduce Billy to the Choose FI community here. And with that, Billy, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks so much for having me on. And as I was listening to Jonathan open up, that's exactly how I felt my first day when I was arrested and went in my first jail cell. Like, my life is over. I will never be able to overcome this. I will now be a failure at the age of 21 for the rest of my life. That was a living nightmare. And my life became that, but I overcame that to who I am now and can't wait to dive into it with you.
Well, let's start and let's go back. I mean, how does someone end up with a 10-year prison sentence at the age of 21? I mean, you're a college kid. On Monday, by Friday, you're incarcerated. What happens here?
That's exactly how it started out. So I was a college senior about to graduate. I was a dean's list student. So I didn't have any of the red flag warning signs of like, this guy's trouble. He's going in a way. I was well liked, but I had a secret life. And usually people get in trouble, they have these secret lives. And I was that. I loved to get high, push my mind as far as it could go, experiment with drugs, experiment with ideas. And I wasn't afraid of experimenting and taking risks. And unfortunately, I took risks that I was into drugs. I was partying. I was selling drugs at concert music festivals. And one night I was partying with a friend. He walked home. He had an accidental overdose in his sleep. And the next morning I was arrested and then later charged with reckless homicide by delivery of a controlled substance for the death of my friend.
So Billy, you're describing this experimenting, but you're also describing this secret double life. Did you have any sense that things had gone amiss, or was this what you wanted to be living at the time?
Yeah, I think I was living the life that I wanted to live. It was fun. I think the first time I ever used drugs, I smoked weed when I was 21, and then we tried LSD later and mushrooms, and then I started going to raves and hippie music festivals. My life was a party, and it was almost like plugging yourself into an electrical volt. Like, it was electric. It was almost like winning the lottery of somebody who has never touched money before, and all of a sudden they have $2 million, like this power and this feeling. I unfortunately was like, well, this has to come from a good place if I'm feeling this good and this high all the time. This has to come from God somehow. I was almost like a modern 90s hippie. But what I didn't realize is that when you're taking risks and you're playing with drugs, horrible things can happen to you out of the blue. And I went for 6 years using drugs, and then just one night, everything started to change.
You're in prison. You've got a 10-year sentence. You're not getting out early. what do you do with your time? Like, I mean, we're talking about this lost decade. You're already kind of planning what's on the other side of this. Just kind of walk us through, if you mind, some of these actionable takeaways of how you prepared yourself, how you coped and grappled with it. Was it just a survive, or was there any sort of planning that started in prison?
Yeah, I think with any transition of life or any change of life, there's change that happens. So you have the first stage. One, you've probably found yourself in a bottom somewhere, whether financially or in drug addiction or in a bad relationship or something. And the first thought goes on is, my life sucks. And that was me sitting in my first jail cell. You deal with that. You deal with the depression, the shame, the embarrassment, the self-disgust and loathing. Because I had self-disgust, even though I was talking about how great I felt. The minute it was over, I'm like, oh my God, I spent 10 years not even knowing who I was, lying to people I cared about. Because I had to tell people I wasn't using drugs. I had to look normal. So accepting that horrible feeling of shame and change. And then I think the next step comes in is like, you know what? I don't have to be this person forever. And I'll always remember I had a cellmate the first week I was in. This is back in 2002. And he looked at me and he'd been in jail before. I'd never had been. And he's like, listen, man, what can hold your mind together in is they can't hold you forever in this place. You will get a second shot. That was the thought I grabbed onto. And I think that's like that for anybody out there. Eventually you have that thought of, I'm in this nightmare place, but I don't have to be here forever. And that was the next piece of hope that started pursuing me down this journey that I'm on now.
Billy, you described before when Jonathan was talking about the lost decade and that first day or that first week or whatever it may be in prison where it looked hopeless. Was it this conversation with a friend that was this awakening moment for you, or were there other things going on? How did you get over that hump of this hopelessness?
Yeah, since this is a financial podcast, I mean, I can relate a lot to finances, you know? Usually when people realize they're in a bad financial spot, it's not one thing. It's, oh, this bill came due and I can't pay it. Okay, there's one thing. Oh, I have no savings this month. Oh, I can't go out with my friends Saturday night because I have no money and I'm broke. Oh, I'm buying stuff to cover up my shame. And then all of a sudden there's this avalanche of awakening that comes over you. In my own personal life, that was the same awakening that had. It was this friend that said, you can't do a second chance. Here's a story. The first phone call you have to make when you go into jail, you have to call somebody. I had to call my mother. She answered the phone and I'm about to destroy her, you know, because now her son's in jail. She doesn't know. That was another avalanche moment for me is I don't want to be this person who has to call my mother from jail. I am better than that. My parents raised me better for that. I am angry at myself. And all of a sudden the next revelation came and said, rather than be sitting here angry for myself, let's turn this anger around and do something about this. And it might take me a month to get out here. It might take me a year to get out here. It might take me 10 years to get out here, but I'm going to get out here and I'm going to be better than this. So there was another avalanche moment and there was more too.
Billy, you inspire me, dude. I like literally want to go run around the block after just talking to you for 5 minutes. This is amazing. But there's more here. So you're not in prison for 1 month or 2 months. You're in prison for 10 years. Walk me through that. I mean, seriously, 6 months, 12 months in, 24 months in, are you just from a skill perspective, skill development, continual knowledge? A lot of that is influenced by your surroundings. You have four walls. Do your skills stay stagnant, or is there a way that you're even in this interim, in this period of time, you're able to grow yourself?
Yeah, you know, since a lot of us are bloggers and writers and creative people and have dreams bigger than our jobs, I had this little voice in the back of my mind that said, you want to start writing about this. You want to remember this one day. So I started a journal. It was just a stupid little journal, but that became my life. And what I found out is when you work and you sacrifice for something, because writing was hard, writing these journals were hard, facing my emotions were hard, that discipline can talk to you and it can start giving you visions of who you want to be. And so it started with writing, and then I started reading. Then I started having hope, just hope that, hey, I could become somebody else there. So now, this is long before I ever had an idea about money, because money doesn't exist in prison or jail. But I had hope that I can make the impossible possible with my life. And I think that's a seminal mindset shift in my mind that I changed. And once I believed that I could make the impossible possible, I was like, how can I make myself so good at certain things that I can control in here, such as reading, writing, talking, that when I get out, I am good at these things that I can, that my skills cannot be denied when I got out. And so for the next 8 years, it was constantly, how do I get better at what I can control in here? And that's mindset, that's discipline, that's leadership skills of just leading myself and writing and all of it. I mean, I'm not a professional writer today. I somewhat on my blog, but you know what? I kill my emails in my business, and my clients love buying from me because I'm like, hey, I can communicate every thought that they want to have answered.
Billy, one quote from your website absolutely blew me away, and I have to read it here. It's, quote, I stayed sane in prison by falling in love with writing. Writing daily journals allowed me to mentally escape the concrete blocks and razor wire fences surrounding me. Writing set me free to explore the landscapes in my imagination and the spiritual forces creating my reality. Rather than being defined by the prison I was in, I let my new self-exploration and self-education define who I was becoming. I just would love to hear you talk about that. That is one of the most incredible passages I've read.
Oh, yeah, I'm so glad you pulled it up because it summed it all up. We all have our artistic, creative abilities. And for me, writing was the one that did it for me. But every time I put, and actually I used a typewriter. So every time I heard that click, click, click from my typewriter, it took me away to a place that I loved. It took me out of this concrete cell that I was sharing another room with. If you want to know what prison's like, go lock yourself inside of your own home bathroom with your toilet right there, drag somebody you've never met off the street, and live in that cell for the next year or two. When I practiced my creative abilities, it took me away from that. And I'd see visions of who I wanted to be and what I could be. And I don't know where this thought came from, but I realized the gap to get me from who I am today into the gap or the person that I want to be in my future was practicing the skills that could get me there. And so to me, the creative exploration that I tried to do with drugs and failed now helped me escape this horrible situation and gave me a vision. Like, I was like, now I know who I finally want to be, and it's all legal, and I can never get in trouble for doing this again.
I hope your cellmate likes the sound of a typewriter.
Well, actually, this is a funny story, because I hate, after being in jail for a year, one thing that still bothers me is endless noise, because in prison, you're surrounded by constant noise, TVs, yelling, dominoes slamming on tables, cards, guys yelling at each other. It's constant noise. So I actually would, you know, work out a situation with my cellmate that he'd have the mornings, I'd have the afternoons, he'd go do something, and then we just had our own alone time.
Billy, you talked about skills, the skills to get me there, to where I want to be in my life. How do you pick those skills up in prison by yourself? How does that work?
You know, the only way I can answer this honestly is what I had to do was faith. And I don't mean this, I mean, you can interpret faith however you want, but what I mean by faith is, nobody was there to tell me this was going to work. Nobody was there to say, no teacher or college professor was going to say, yep, you're going to be successful if you do this. It was a faith that I'm here for a reason. It was a faith that I have gifts and that I can impact someone somehow. And it was a faith that what I'm doing now, which is writing, reading, studying philosophy, these things I'm good at. And I can go somewhere with them. We can fast forward now. I mean, to when I got out, I didn't know if anything that I did would work after 10 years in prison. I didn't know if anything, all this writing, all this studying I did, all this planning I did would make a difference in me getting a $9 an hour job when I got out. But I did it because it felt like the right thing to do. It felt like it, like my soul was screaming inside me saying, you can be somebody. And the only answer I had to how do I become that person was to do something.
You're going exactly where I was hoping. And I wanted to talk about that first day out. You're a guy with a 10-year record that loves to write. I mean, and just is passionate about it and is exploding into the universe, but you've got a criminal record. Where do you go? I mean, what do you do? How does someone, and honestly, not just you, but maybe someone else, it's like, oh, well, that's great for him, but he's an outlier. The rest of us, that's not going to work for us. Like, just put yourself in that situation of that individual that's out on day one. And we know that there's so much rebound, right? You go out, you can't make it, you can't thrive in society, and you go back. Walk us through what you did to get reintegrated into society.
I broke it down to the most basic goals that I hoped any human being could accomplish in America. I walked out of prison with 10 years of philosophy in my head, but I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go get a $50,000 a year job right off the bat, and I'm going to be a superstar on day five. I walked out of prison and said, one, I was arrested when I was going in my senior year in college. I can finish my college education. The next thing I thought was I should apply and I can try to get a $9 or $10 an hour job, a minimum wage job. I was like, if anybody can do this in America, I can at least get a $10 an hour job by trying hard. once I set those goals, and that's what I did when I first got out, it was, I lived in my parents' basement, like a lot of convicts do. They get out, they go to either parents' basement or a halfway house. And I had a family that was able to help me out. And then I just, and this is another longer conversation, how I got in school, I started college 6 days after. And then a friend actually got a hold of me on Facebook. I got on social media. I'd never seen Facebook, Twitter, anything like this before. So I had no idea what it was. And all of a sudden this message came up, said, hey, I heard about what happened to you. I want to help you out. I own a business. Come work for me. I worked for him for a little while. That ended. And then I applied for my first job and they never asked me about a criminal background, maybe because it was a low paying job and they could care less. They were just looking for somebody that wanted to show up to work. And I got that. And then the biggest revelation happened. Just because you set your first goals doesn't mean you have to live those forever. Then you're like, okay, I got my first set of goals. Now that's not enough for me. What's the next set of goals I can hit? And then I realized, oh, then I can go up to tier three and my third step of goals and fourth and fifth. And then I can just keep going.
Billy, you're describing what ultimately is new beginnings. This transcends, obviously, getting out of prison. I don't imagine a huge percentage of our audience is going to spend 10 years in prison, right? But many of them are going to have new beginnings. And I think that mindset of being open to trying things. You spent, as you said, 10 years learning the philosophy of ultimately success, right? That's that reading between the lines. That's what you were doing. You were preparing yourself for future success and just increasing the odds of success. That's how I see this journey. And I'd love for your thoughts on like how other people who maybe they're in an industry that is going away and they feel hopeless. Maybe that's akin to what you felt that first day in prison, right? That hopelessness. Talk those people through, if you can get over this, what they should be looking at to make their lives better.
Yeah, totally. And you hit the nail on the head. When I was in prison, I studied the philosophy of failure, which I had become. And then I studied the philosophy of success, which is who I wanted to be. That's why I'm here speaking about this. I mean, yeah, I spent 10 years in prison, but I'm here and I identify with all those people who've had failed opportunities, whether it be a job, whether it be a marriage, whether it be a child who, you know, is going through struggles and you feel like a failure. That's hard to accept. But then the success is on the other end of that. And then I also studied the philosophy of success. And one of the biggest things that stuck in my mind was, just because you failed doesn't mean you're a failure. And so the first step is just to accept that, you know what, you're not a failure and you are somebody. And then then the next step is that you can forgive yourself for some of the mistakes you made. Like, that was a massive liberating feeling to me when I finally forgave myself and said, I made a mistake, but I'm not this evil human being who was the cause of that mistake. And then once you do that, then you start setting goals. And once you start seeing your vision and you rely on those faith things that there's something in your soul telling you, hey, I should do this. You know, I don't know what it is. I should eat better. I should go to the gym more. For me, it was, I should write a journal, whatever. And then you start doing those. And then all of a sudden more visions of start coming in like, okay, what's my next goal I can reach for? For me, it was, I got my $10 an hour job. And then I was like, well, I should start applying for better jobs. And I met at an interview, somebody met me and he's like, hey man, you got the energy and the fearlessness to start your own business. You should do that. He's like, why don't you be an independent rep for my company? I'll bankroll all your orders. I'll teach you how to sell and you can start your own company. I was like, wow, that's cool. I never thought about that, but that would give me all the freedom that I ever wanted. And before you know it, a year after getting out of prison, I started my first business in my parents' basement.
Let's tell us a little bit more about this. So you are an independent rep. What does that mean? What's a compensation model? Like, what are the actionable takeaways? I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah. So I'm a contract sales rep. Basically, I own my own business and then I can sell whatever products I want. So I'm a professional. My business is a professional sales business. The first business I started, and that's my biggest moneymaker, was I sell branded clothing, you know, t-shirts. When you go to a 5K, they're all buying them from a rep like me. I went cold calling door to door, meeting businesses, and I started getting orders. I mean, that's my biggest moneymaker. I've been doing it for 5 years now. I sell around $400,000 worth of products to corporate accounts that I've met, you know, through cold calling, networking, different things. I get a percentage of the profit, a large percent of it. And then the company that I contract for gets a chunk of it also for all the overhead that I don't have to deal with. So for me, it works out perfect because I don't have to do the hiring, the firing, the overhead of a business and take all that financial risk. I just got to bring the orders in.
Wow. So it's almost like a drop shipping model, in essence, you know, to kind of relate it to an online store. There's no risk for you. You're just selling, right?
No, right now I'm sitting in my home office in my basement. The biggest risk I had to do is buy a computer to run my email. And then I contract all the work out with other businesses. So it's a drop shipping model, but it's not like on Amazon where you buy one t-shirt, you know, and your profit is $2. My orders can range between, you know, $300 and $30,000. I think I had a $35,000 order once. Somebody else makes the product, ship them to my clients. I'm the one that's responsible for making sure all the deadlines and everything's right. And then, you know, the profit is split up between me and the companies I work with, and everybody leaves happy.
Billy, in one of your articles, in talking about this first business, you said, "In prison, I spent my time training my mind to spot opportunities. I instantly saw a cool one. So in 2014, I started my first business." Talk me through, like, A, how you trained your mind to spot opportunities, and B, what you thought about this specific business that had so much promise.
Yeah, let's talk about spotting opportunities first. And what is an opportunity? An opportunity, philosophically speaking, is something you want to do, something that will make your life better, something that would be fun and engaging and hopefully help somebody else. So to me, when I spot an opportunity to start a business, I was like, one, I could be happier because I could work from home, manage my own hours. You know, two, I could make somebody's life easier because there's clients out there in the world. I mean, the apparel business and corporate sales are billions of dollars. So there's companies out there that need a rep and want better service than maybe they had. And so that was my first thing, is like, wow, I could be helping somebody out. And then two, I could be building a lifestyle business of myself, of living at, you know, working from home. And the cool thing about just the little business I started, I'm not preaching everybody go out and do this, because there's entrepreneurship is hard too. But it, you know, we're talking about, this entire podcast is financial independence. And what is financial independence? It's waking up, choosing what you want to do for the day. And you have to do something, because you can't just sit there and just think that life is going to be great. Like, you have to do something. And I think entrepreneurship is so close to financial independence, it's ridiculous, especially once you get successful at it. So that's what I saw, is like, I can be free, I can have fun, I can make money, I can help people. And then once I start one business, I can build more and just go along my merry way.
You know, this is incredible. And I think one of the things that has to be happening parallel to this, right alongside of it, is the process of reconciliation. I'm thinking about this call you had to make to your mom, you know, on day one of prison. And now 10 years out, not only are you out, but you're taking action and you're rebuilding kind of the shambles of your life. Talk us through that. What was going on in the background with family, with friends, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think for me, the reconciliation started when I was in prison. You know, all of the reconciliation I did with my entire life started the second day after I got arrested. I didn't wait for 10 years and be like, oh, I'll just do that eventually. It was like I started in prison. So with my family, you know, it started with friends. But then when I got out too, there was people that hadn't seen me in 10 years. And I accepted the fact that they don't know who I am. You know, they're there for me now, but I'm sure there was trust issues. And that was a natural thing. Like, I had to rebuild trust. And the same thing was with me. I wasn't the same person I was at 20 years old that I was now at 31 years old. I just had to be patient and say, I'm just going to keep doing the right thing. You know, the biggest thing that I did when I was in prison was I grew up living two lives. I had this party life, and then I had this suburban college boy life that I just thought, as long as I acted how everybody wants me to act, then I can do whatever I want to do. And what I found out is success isn't attracted to acting like it. You got to live, breathe, and be success, and not just pretend you are. I just took time to be real. And then I think the biggest step was I realized I didn't have to be friends and didn't have to reconcile with everybody. Part of journey of life is to leave old relationships behind and find new ones. And so that's why when I got out, one of the first things I did is started looking around for a cool church atmosphere, because I was like, well, most people in there are probably helpful. Probably if they're not sober, they're probably trying to stay sober. That's the type of friends I needed. And so I went on a journey to make new connections and new friends. And that was the best thing I did, was part of, you know, reconcile with the people that were important to me, but also move on and develop a new life. I mean, you could say the financial independence community is part of my new life too. Like, I didn't know any of you before prison, but I met you guys after. Why did I target not only you, but other friends? It's because I was looking for people who were going somewhere in life. I wanted people that were gonna be inspiring and helpful and could help me become that person I wanted to be. So wherever those people were in life, I was running to them.
You know, I know on your website, you mentioned you got married in 2015. you know, it sounds, based on your website anyways, that your wife is completely on this journey to financial independence with you. I mean, you guys are a team. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So my wife, she actually does all the artwork on the blog. I do the majority of the writing. She'll write posts, but I'm the writer, so she's the artist. We actually met at a church bonfire back in 2013, something like that. I'd been out a year for prison. A common question is like, what did your wife think of you when she found out she was in prison? And my answer was like, that's the first thing that she knew about me. So it worked out well, because that was kind of the first thing I told people when I got out, like, yeah, this is me. This is where I come from. And 99% of people are like, I want to help you. How can I help you? And obviously I was looking for a relationship that I just started out friends with a woman. And the next thing you know, friendship hanging out turns into dates. And the next thing you know, you're a couple. And that's what happened with us.
Thanks for explaining how the relationship works.
Yeah. Hey, for anybody who's single out there, that's the way to do it, man. Look for a friend and just hang out with them. And then hopefully never stop hanging out.
You could be a spokesperson for eHarmony. I'm sure they would love your playbook.
Yeah. So Bill, you meet your future wife, I guess, a year out of prison. What does your financial life look like at this point? I'm assuming you had, I don't know if you had any debt from college. Do you have a negative net worth? What does your financial life look like solo? And then as you move into this relationship, like, how do you guys move forward?
Yeah, so I was blessed enough. The last 2 years I was in prison, I was on a work release program that allowed me to save money and pay off some of the debt, because I did have fines. I think I had like $15,000 in fines restitution. I was able to pay that off with my work release job the last 2 years. I mean, I was still in prison, but I had an actual job. And then I walked out of prison with, I think, around $6,000 to $10,000, somewhere in there. So I had something to start living in my parents' basement, but I had no idea about managing money. I was just trying to survive for the first 2 years. But then I got my first job, I started a business. And the next thing you know, I'm like, oh, this $10,000 accidentally grew into $20,000. And then my wife, and she had some student loan debt, and I was like, hey, let's just pay this off, because we want to be free. And my wife and I might argue about stupid small things. Like, we had an argument about where to put Christmas decorations. But one thing I met when we met each other was we never disagreed about the big picture of where we wanted to go in our life. So I would say almost we fell in love with having the same vision of the life we want to live, which is freedom, financial freedom, helping people, inspiring people. That's what we wanted. So when we have little disagreements, it doesn't matter, because we always have that big vision to fall back on. So she had some student loan debt that we crushed. And then before you know it, we're both living in our parents' house, and that $20,000 is $40,000. We're like, well, let's, you know, my business is doing well. Let's buy our first house. We took $40,000, had a $600 wedding. I'll slow that down, because that was a $600
wedding.
That was a huge step in our financial independence game. Was like, well, yeah, we could have a bunch of family drama and not do what we want, or we could just have a $600 wedding in my parents' living room and take the $40,000 and buy our first house. And that's what we did.
Billy, talk to me about where you picked up financial knowledge. Like, was this some of the skills that you picked up in prison? Like, did you have, I don't know, an introduction to Dave Ramsey or something like this? How did you pick up any financial skills at all?
Yeah, this is the weirdest thing for me, because, I mean, I started my blog when I had around $150,000 net worth, because I was like, holy crap, I accumulated $150,000 almost on accident. I should probably write how I did this, because somebody might want to read it. And I look back on the financial journey we had, it was almost by accident. We were saving all the money we could just by being super, and when I say we, it's my wife and I, by being super frugal, so that we would never have to do something we didn't want. You know, I just talked about the big vision my wife and I share about helping people and doing our creative things we love. For her, it's art. For me, it's writing. And we never wanted to have to take a job that we'd say no to our passion projects with. And so the only logical option was save all your money so you never have to do something you don't want to do. So $40,000 turned into $60,000. And then I was like, okay, now I own a home and I have an extra $30,000. What do I do? And that's when I kind of found the financial independence community, because I was Googling and bam, all of a sudden there's J.L. Collins with the stock series and there's you guys with VTSAX. And then I'm like, well, let's try that. And so we did that and that worked. And then we're like, well, you know, let's do a investment property. And I'll also do this shout out. It also helps to have friends that can give you a guiding light. When I was in prison in 2011, 2012, my best friend was buying properties, starting businesses, probably had over $1 million net worth. And so from prison, he's like, yeah, I found in 2011, 2012, he's like, yeah, I found this blog, Mr. Money Mustache, and I'm not spending it. And I never forgot what he did. So I said, when I have my chance of freedom, I'm just going to do what he did.
Billy, you're ultimately describing freedom. That's what you and your wife wanted. You wanted freedom. You wanted options. But you said in there, you almost made it sound obvious. What else would you do but save your money so you weren't beholden to anybody, right? But who is that obvious to? Sure, maybe people who have come across FI, but you figured this out way before on your own. It's not obvious to anybody. Like, how, look back and say, like, how was that obvious to you guys?
Yeah, and I think this is something we can all identify if you've never been in prison or not. But for me, when I was sitting in my jail cell for 10 years straight, or prison cell, or walking the prison yard, I was dreaming of finally being able to do what I want. I wasn't dreaming of a new car or a bigger home or anything. Like, here I was in prison clothes, and I found a way to sit there and write my journals and stories and novels and say, I'm happy. I'm not where I want to be, but I'm happy. And I had nothing. And so that was the moment where I realized freedom is everything. Freedom to listen, to have the time. You know, when I got arrested, I was so busy in college and everything. All of a sudden I went to jail, and it was the first time I stopped. And I wasn't living for everybody else. I was living for me. And I was like, this is what life is all about, is to listen to who you are as a person, what you want to do. So when I got out, it was a fancy car could drive by me. I could care less. I was like, I want the freedom to live the life that I was living in prison, but never, ever have to be incarcerated again, that I could live the life happy and accomplish all the dreams on a bigger audience with more opportunities in the free world.
So Billy, you're describing your entire life changed for the better in prison. Like, on the whole, obviously we're not pro-prison here. That's clearly not the takeaway. Why do you think you changed so much? And maybe many people in prison don't. What was different about you? What was different about your journey? Did you meet people in prison that you just got lucky, or was it something internal in you? Really talk me through that, because I'm just fascinated by this. What was it about you and your journey?
Yeah, I wrote something this recently, and I think one of the biggest life hacks to my success was that I was ambitious and fearless enough to say, I can turn the impossible to possible. And that might not sound like a lot, but when you reverse it, it's a very scary situation. When you say, the possible is impossible for me. And that one little mindset can change your entire direction. And I don't want to judge other people in prison. I mean, the reason why people go back to prison so often is because of drug situations. When they get out, they start drinking, using drugs again. And the reason why they start drinking and using drugs again is because they give it a short period of time, 3 months, and then they start saying, the possible is impossible for me. The only rational step on the other side of that decision is like, well, I might as well go have a drink. I might as well go buy that rock on the corner from that guy. So for me, I think it was just to choose the audacity to say, the impossible is possible for me. And if I work my hardest, you know, it's not being a billionaire. It's about the impossible is me being happy. So I think that, and I also think when I was in prison, like there's a saying that says, you know, and this is good for early retirement of, you know, everybody in prison says, do the time and don't let the time do you. And if you let time in life do you, it's a very hopeless, depressing space. But if you do the time, if you create what you want to do, if you see a dream that you want to chase that nobody else can see, and you do the time, you put in the effort to accomplish that, well, then happy is going to be there no matter how much you make, how much you save, how soon your ER date is. You might never end up retiring because you're like, man, working makes me too happy because I'm doing what I want to do all day long.
Yeah, that reminds me of a quote that I think one of your friends in jail said to you, which was, again, just one of the most amazing things I've heard. He said, the secret to living life is that it doesn't matter what happens to you. It only matters how you respond to it. The world may forget that you're alive and your family may die and disappear, but as long as you know you're alive and still pursuing your goals for your life, your existence and purpose is just as important as everyone else's. Every day, no matter who you are or where you have to wake up, you just have to keep going toward the life you want, no matter where you end up or what has happened to you.
Someone said that to you in prison?
Yeah, actually, I can go back to the memory now. That was from a guy who'd currently done 25 years in prison and was going to do life. He was probably about 55, 60, got arrested when he was, you know, inner city gang type situation. You know, I don't remember what the crime was, but was doing life. Because I think I asked him, like, man, how do you deal with being a lifer? That's how he replied to me.
It only matters how you respond to it. Isn't that just the best way to approach life mindset-wise? You control your response to everything. This is the key to success in life, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you summed it all up. It's like the first day in prison was shock. The first day in jail was shock. But the second day is when I had to start making a decision. Am I going to start believing that the possible is impossible for me? Or am I going to start believing that, hey, I am somebody, I was created for a reason, and my story is not over. They can, one day they're going to have to let me out of here. And I have every day in this prison now to turn my life into a training grounds, a boot camp. So when I get out, it's not that nobody's going to be able to stop me, but that I'm going to at least have a shot to do what I believe I'm meant to do.
How you respond to the world, that is a massive takeaway for me as well. And I'm really curious, you know, I think I'm trying to put myself in your shoes. You, back in 2012, you have a net worth of roughly like $20,000. And I know you had said you had hit that six-figure mark. You had your first 100,000 or so saved up. Like what's your net worth now?
Yeah, I just did my net worth a couple weeks ago. I think it was 266. I've had some good paydays coming in. So, you know, next time I do net worth, it won't be far from 300.
That's so awesome, man. Congratulations. And help us, like, what's your path to financial independence for here? What have you and your wife designed for each other? What are you guys looking forward to?
Yeah, I think it stems from my mindset of, you know, we're always going to be opportunity seekers. You know, we love VTSAX. We got, I think, 60,000 retirement accounts, maybe another 40,000, 50,000 in stocks. So we got, I think, 110 in stocks. We have my house, our primary residence, which you could use as a rental in the future. We bought an investment property 2 years ago. That's worked out well. I love cash flow from real estate. So I think, and I really like this 50-50 stock real estate blend. I am handy. I didn't know I was. So I do like real estate and all the drama that comes with it. I mean, just to take a day off of writing and go swing a hammer and do a house project is relaxing to me. So I could see us adding another couple properties. And then, you know, being an entrepreneur, you know, especially when you got a lot of cash stacked up, you're not that far from FI. Because at a certain point, when you start hitting 500,000 net worth, at least this is my idea, we start hitting $500,000 net worth. At that point, your businesses are making money, you're having fun doing what you want to do. So my goal now is just to get to that 500, then really just take a step back and be like, you know, I'm not desperate for money anymore. Now it's just pursue those passion projects that can bring in a little bit money on the side. I mean, I started my blog 2 years ago and that started to bring in a little cash. So I think that's one of the secrets of my success is starting projects before you need them. You know, I don't need my blog until 2 years from now, but it was a good, smart idea to start it 2 years ago. So I'm almost already there.
That's so awesome. Wow. Wow. This has been amazing. And I think you've just really covered everything. You know, Bill, on most shows, that would be the end of the episode. But on this show, we would love to give you the chance to tackle the hot seat. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm totally ready.
In a world drowning in debt and rampant consumption, trapped by the chains of lifestyle inflation, these questions highlight the secrets of those who have broken free. Welcome to the Choose FI Hot Seat.
All right, Billy, question number one, your favorite blog that's not your own.
Yeah, you know who I'm love to follow and has become a good friend of mine is Millennial Revolution, Christy over there. What I love about her is we were both fiction writers before we ever came bloggers. And I love good quality writing, word choice. She delivers on that. And then, you know, when I got out of prison, I needed money help. I couldn't, you know, that was the one weak spot I had. So then there was bloggers like, you know, Financial Samurai, which was 100% money, and J.L. Collins and the stock series, I just immersed that because it was like, this is the stuff I didn't know. So those are some of my favorites. And also, you guys quoted in the article or in this interview a couple times, Budgets Are Sexy, Jay Money, he put out my first guest post, Google Guy in Prison Story, you can read that. And that was a moment I dreamed of every day when I was in prison. So when I hit publish on that, it was dream come true.
Nice. Well, question number two is your favorite article of all time. Now, this can actually be one that you wrote or somebody else's.
Yeah, this one's a challenging one because I am such a mixture of influences. If you could take my mind apart and see the philosophy I live by, we got Martin Luther King in there. We got Mr. Money Mustache. We got some Choose FI in there. We got some Tony Robbins, all types of things. And I was like, but what's one article that could really define me? And after thinking about it, I'm just going to say this. There's a story called The Prodigal Son out of the Bible. It just is a story about two guys get a big inheritance. They're two brothers. One is normal. Tends his farm, takes the money. The other one, man, he goes out in this crazy, awesome party and lives it up probably with, this is back in the zero zeros, but probably drank a lot, partied a lot.
It's slightly historic.
Yeah, slightly historic, you know, like partied it up. Eventually, he realized that life led to nowhere. He came back and his father was still alive. And rather than scolding him and say, you're not good enough, you're not going to be good enough, he said, man, we're so happy to have you back. And if you've ever heard this line, this is where it came from. You were once lost, but now you're found. That sums up my life. And that sums up, you know, if you're perfect out there listening to this, good for you. I didn't live a perfect life. I made mistakes. I made failures, but I came back. And it was so awesome to feel in your heart that you were once lost, but you're found and you can still live the life that you want to live.
Brad, I could have never predicted that the Bible would have made it into our hot seat like two times in the past 6 weeks.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have read it and a lot of copies have been sold of it.
Apparently. All right, question number three, your favorite life hack.
Yeah, the first thing is, I think in the financial independence community, you know, the goal is to be cheap sometimes. And for me, the biggest life hack is not to be cheap. I love to buy quality things. Like if you look at all my entertainment is free because I have cool bikes, cool rollerblades, cool skis, cool snowshoes. I mean, I bought all that stuff on Craigslist, but I spent a little bit of money. I mean, I have guitars in my house that I play with. So all my entertainment is free. So for me, the best life hack was investing in cool things that make you a better person, develop your skills, and you can have fun along the way. And that way you don't have to pay for entertainment, such as expensive concert tickets, expensive drinks at bars, etc.
Yeah, I hear you. I definitely cringe at that thought that people think we're cheap or that we're advertising that as a positive aspect of life. Like to me, it's about just being intentional with your spending and finding whatever there is value for you. That's the crucial part. You might have spent a good bit of money on nicer things, but if you're going to use those for a decade or more, that's extreme value, right?
Man, totally.
All right, Billy, question number four, your biggest financial mistake.
Yeah. And I think we can sum up a lot of the conversation or this whole episode with this is when I was younger, before I was arrested at the age of 21, I tried to buy drugs and experiences that would better myself. I thought becoming smart and an interesting person was as easy as paying $5 for a hit of drugs or hit a weed or hit a LSD at a concert. And that led me nowhere. It wastes a lot of money. I mean, probably $10,000, $20,000, $50,000 that could have been invested went nowhere because I was trying to buy the life experience I wanted. And once that was all taken away from me, and once I saw all the drama and crap that drug, alcohol abuse can bring into a person's life, you know, I realized like that happiness I was searching for is found in books. It's found in sacrificing and trying and experimenting and developing your artistic skills or whatever you want to do in life. And most of those things are free. And so my biggest financial mistake was thinking I could pay $10 for something, whatever it is for me or for you that you think could make you a cooler, more interesting, better human being, feel more fulfilled. And for me, what I spent my money on was a lie a lot of times.
I love that response. And to be honest with you, it feels like that answer really answers our question number five as well, the advice you would give your younger self.
Yeah, I totally accidentally did it. But I think my biggest financial mistake was also the story that I would tell my younger self to watch out for.
Billy, we've got a bonus question. So we talk about purchases of value, right? We were just talking about it. Talk me through the purchase or two in the last 12 months that you've made that's added the most value to your life.
Yeah, so I love really cool engineered things that make my life better that last a long period of time. And I love finding deals for them. Bought a new vacuum cleaner this year that I found at Goodwill. It's a Shark. My family was raving about it. Super awesome. Bought a new compound miter saw that I always wanted a while ago since I work on real estate. But here's one it's not a tangible thing that has totally made my wife and I's lives better. So we live in Minnesota. It's a cold state. And for the last 6 years since I've been home, I've always struggled with how do I get through those cold winter months of December and February? Because I'm an outdoors guy. And we've always been too cheap to buy a membership anywhere because we're like, well, we want to save money. But now that we're starting to have money, it's like, well, what's the point of sitting home being miserable and saving money if you're not happy? And so we actually bought a winter community center pass. There's a community center a mile from our house that has a gym and a pool and a hot tub, adult only area place. It's awesome. And we paid, I think, $250 for a winter membership. And it has been the best investment that we have ever made in our lives only because winters now we shrug off because like, oh, we'll just go to the pool and swim around or if I'm bored on a Saturday night, rather than sitting in the dark months where I can't go outside and bike and do all that stuff, I'm like, oh, I'll just bring my computer and go work on the blog in a swimsuit. That has been well worth the $250. I wish we would have done it 6 months ago. And actually last week, we just upgraded to a year membership because we use the thing all the time.
Did you say you're working on your blog in a swimsuit?
Hey, we can laugh about this. I'm a Minnesotan. We're walking around in snowmobile suits half the time. So to be in a swimsuit in December in lights and palm trees. Oh,
well, it's well documented that Brad frolics in his pool, but I guarantee you he's not checking the website. Oh man, Bill, this has been so much fun. I'm so grateful for you for coming on the show and sharing your story. I think there's a lot of value here for people. I'm sure that someone's listening to this. They're hearing about your blog for the first time and they're going to want to connect with you. What is the best way for someone to connect with you and to connect with your content?
Yeah, I think the easiest way is go to wealthwelldone.com. It's just the word wealth. Afterwards, think of a well-done steak that's being fired up and drop me a contact form, leave me a comment, say hi. I love to talk. I just want to be somebody that, you know, you can look at and be like, hey, if this guy did it, maybe I can, if he was able to do 10% more, maybe I can do 10% more and just be a cool happening dude that wants to help people, man.
Bill, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me, both you guys.
Brad, this is such a powerful episode. And I think going back to the way I set up the episode, it speaks to the limiting belief of you have the ability to reclaim the lost decade. Wherever you find yourself in this life, you have the choice to make the impossible possible or conversely to make the possible impossible. And it's, what are you going to choose?
Yeah, and it is about that choice. Billy could have taken his life a completely different path when he got into prison. And he tried to build up skills and he tried to build up a mindset that would lead to success in the future, not to get out 10 years later and be lost. He got out 10 years later and was ready to make a better life. And that's really, really impressive. This is a story that people can take something from, put the prison aside, right? Like talk about making a better life by building that skill set. Jonathan, you and I talk about that all the time. It's the talent stack. It's building up this mental armor. It's building up a set of skills that will make a successful life in the future. And Billy did a wonderful job explaining that.
To our audience, if you got value from today's episode, and if you've been getting value from the episodes up to this point, just take 1 second and press the subscribe button on the platform you're listening to this on. It just lets the providers know you're getting value from the show and you want to be here when we produce additional content. If you want to support us in what we're doing here at ChooseFI, here are 4 easy ways. 1, leave us an iTunes review. To do that, just go to chooseFI.com/iTunes. 2, use our page to sign up for travel credit cards. If you want to travel the world with miles and points instead of your hard-earned dollars, then just go to chooseFI.com/cards and get started today. 3, if you're working on the milestones of FI, set up a personal capital account to track your progress and use our affiliate link. It's completely free and just go to chooseFI.com/PC. P as in Paul, C as in cat. And 4, and most importantly, find your friends, coworkers, and family members who might be open to this message and tell them about the podcast. Have them start with episode 100. It is a fantastic starting place. All right, my friends, the fire is spreading. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
You've been listening to Choose FI Radio Podcast, where we help middle-class America build wealth one life hack at a time.